This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. $20 billion. That's a conservative estimate of how much it would cost to make Louisiana's levees strong enough to withstand a Category 5 hurricane. That's only part of what it would cost to repair the infrastructure of the Gulf Coast, but it is a key decision. Business and homeowners say they can't decide to rebuild or return until they know that the government's committed to make it safe. And 3 months after Hurricane Katrina, many who live on the Gulf Coast worry that Washington's sense of urgency is fading. An editorial in the New Orleans Times-Picayune put it this way: they act as if we wore our skirts too short and invited trouble. Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana has threatened to keep the Senate in session through the holidays unless it approves money for flood protection. Deficit hawks in Congress, though, worry about the price tag. Others, about Louisiana's reputation for corruption. There's uncertainty about the boundaries of federal, state, and local responsibility. Nobody really knows how much will be needed in the long run. Guesses begin at $100 billion, or how much Congress will eventually approve. Later on this World AIDS Day, Ambassador Richard Holbrooke's argument for widespread testing. But first, what do taxpayers and the federal government owe the Gulf Coast? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with the Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, Mitch Landrieu, and he joins us by phone from his office at the State House in Baton Rouge. Sir, it's good of you to join us today.
Thank you so much for having me. How you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Good.
Are you concerned that the political willpower here in Washington is flagging?
Well, I'm not sure that it ever was there to begin with. I think the outpouring and the sympathy from the American people has been there and been strong from the beginning. But quite frankly, we haven't seen much willpower from Congress at all. And I think your lead-in is actually right. I think some members of Congress are treating us as though it's our fault that this storm hit us. And the question that you even ask, you know, what does the country owe, is really kind of a backward question. The question is whether or not Louisiana, as part of America and American citizens, have made a significant investment in this country and will continue to do so if you help them help themselves.
Well, at that point, do you think that this decision on the levees, whether to build them to Category 5 strength, is that a key decision, do you think?
Well, I think there are many key decisions, but let's get to the first point. President Bush came down to sacred soil in Jackson Square in front of the St. Louis Cathedral and said, whatever it takes. Now, the people in Louisiana and really across the entire southern part of the country, Mississippi and Alabama alike, are curious about its Congress seemingly willingness to not heed the president's call. We're also curious about the fact that he is continuing to persevere so aggressively on Iraq, which is perhaps a good strategy. But I think what the people down here, when they hear the president say we're going to do whatever it takes in Iraq to get the job done, they want to hear the same thing about the southern part of the country, because we think that we're so vital to the country's long-term economic interest.
Yet we just saw the figures for economic activity in the third quarter, the GDP, and, well, surprising growth. The storm didn't seem to do much.
Well, it didn't seem to do much to the rest of the country, but it did a lot to us, and it hurt us in a very real way. And the American citizens in the southern part of the country need the help of the federal government. It's not something that we can do on our own, although private industry, the not-for-profit industry, are doing everything they can to help themselves. And now we believe that Congress ought to fulfill the president's promise and do what is necessary for as long as it's necessary to stand this part of the country back up.
So it sounds like what you're asking for is political leadership.
I'm looking for the Congress to honor the president's word. And to date, they haven't done that. They've found many different excuses, which you alluded to. One of them is Louisiana is corrupt. Well, there's public corruption all over the country. There's no question about that. 10 governors from 10 states in the last 4 or 5 years have been removed from office. I don't hear anybody saying, look, let's not put federal money in those states because there's some level of public corruption. That is a very serious issue all across America, and it should be dealt with in a very forthright way. But that has nothing to do with what's happening down in Louisiana right now. And what we need to do is focus on the job that needs to be done to protect this part of the country, primarily because we're part of the economic engine. The oil and gas revenues that flow through this state are important. The fisheries are important. The economic impact and the soul and the culture are all very critical pieces to what we understand of as the United States of America. And people down here are really feeling left out and forgotten, and really feel like the congressmen themselves and the senators should kind of get focused back in on this and stay as long as is necessary to fix these particular problems. And levees is just one of the issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, this week, the head of the long-term hurricane relief effort, Donald Powell, said he was not sure that the federal government should spend the money it takes to make the levees strong enough to resist a Category 5 event.
Well, unfortunately, that's just because Mr. Powell just got here and is not as well educated as he should be at this point in time. And I'm sure that within the next week, he's going to get up to snuff. But, you know, he didn't get appointed until some 3 months after the storm, which is a question in and of itself. And I'm sure that once he has a chance to study all of the issues, he is going to conclude, like most of the experts have, that if you want to protect a vital part of this country, that you will build levees that are significant to protect us. It's silly that we even asking the question. We didn't ask it about San Francisco when the earthquakes tore it apart or the fires. We didn't ask it about Florida when four hurricanes hit it last year. We didn't ask it about the Midwest. But for some reason, all of these issues keep coming up about Louisiana. And so people here are curious about why those questions continue to be raised.
Well, one of the things is the scale of the problem.
Well, there's no question about it. It's a huge problem. And that's one thing that I believe that it's hard for the country to get its brain around. This devastation is total and complete. The breadth of it is just unbelievable, and it's going to cost a tremendous amount of money. But we believe, and I think most people will support us, that the investment is well worth it, and the dollars returned back to the federal fisc over the years will be quite enough to satisfy the investment that's going to be made up front.
Lieutenant Governor, thanks very much for being with us today.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Mitch Landrieu, Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, joining us by phone from the State Office House in the State House office in Baton Rouge. Excuse me there. Joining us now from Denver is Republican Congressman Tom Tancredo. Back in September, he voted against House legislation to give an additional $52 billion to Katrina relief efforts. And Congressman, always good to have you on the program.
Thank you. Yeah.
Why did you oppose that legislation?
Well, because we had just the week prior to that appropriated $10.5 billion for Katrina relief. We had no idea. There wasn't a soul on the floor of the House of Representatives that could tell you how that money had been spent, let alone why we were appropriating another $50 billion or why $50 billion was the right number. It was just a nice round number that somebody came up with, but there were certainly no criteria established to say, here's the problem, here's how much it's going to take to fix it, and so here's what we need to appropriate.
So you were just afraid this was a blank check?
It most certainly was a blank check. We had absolutely no idea, and there was no accountability built into the measure in terms of how we were going to prevent inappropriate expenditures. We were aggressive in saying that we would send IG officers down there.
Inspectors General.
Inspector General. But they're really only equipped to do something after an event. If somebody misspends the money, then they will look into it and file charges. What I was hoping for, and I think a number of other people were hoping for, was something that we could set up that would prevent those inappropriate expenditures.
Mm-hmm. When you say inappropriate expenditures, is that corruption?
Absolutely. That was a big part of it. You know, the Truman Commission, right after the Second World War, when we started the Marshall Plan, they recognized that the same kind of thing could happen when you're in a sort of a massive expenditure mode. And so he set up a commission that was designed to oversee those expenditures. If that wasn't it, if it was going to be, it could be just a person maybe, but it needed to be somebody or some entity built into the appropriations process that would be there as the policeman.
What do you say? I think you may have heard Lieutenant Governor Landrieu there at the end. What do you say to his argument? First of all, we're citizens of this country. We deserve to be treated as other victims of natural disasters have been treated. And, this is going to be a good investment in the long run.
It's interesting that he pointed out San Francisco, the earthquake in San Francisco, I think he said, and also the Midwest, I assume maybe Chicago, he's talking about the fire. It's interesting that both of those events, perhaps even more catastrophic in terms of the number of lives lost and then the amount of property destroyed than in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
But both of those cities were rebuilt within 3 years with not a single penny of federal money coming into them. They were done by the people there. And, you know,
and he also mentioned Florida, which was last year, and a lot of federal
Florida. No, of course. And you're absolutely right. Things have changed. The government has changed in terms of the way they, you know, we respond to things. I'm just talking about the two he used in his discussion as to why we should be doing the same thing in Louisiana. I don't think we should be doing it anywhere. And you were right, I think, in saying, well, you know, the size of this thing plays a role. And the amount of money we're talking about certainly plays a role. And the corruption that was endemic. You know, how do you avoid the fact that the head of the FBI last year described Louisiana's public corruption as, quote, epidemic, endemic, and entrenched? He said, no branch of government is exempt. He went on to list the number of politicians that were serving time for corruption. It's, you know, it's incredible. Well, do you just ignore that? Do you just pretend it doesn't exist? Because it's certainly, it does get members of Congress from Louisiana upset at you and the governor and a variety of other things, but I don't think you can just ignore it.
We just have a minute or so left with you, but should the federal government pay the estimated $20 billion or more to make those levees able to withstand a Category 5 event?
Well, I certainly would not put another penny into that particular part of the reconstruction process as long as the political structure in Louisiana is as it is with regard to those levies. The many boards and commissions that are established to oversee it, the division of responsibility makes it impossible to know who's really in charge. The kind of cronyism that has manifested itself with the appointment of people to oversee these various districts. No, I wouldn't pay a penny to support that kind of process. Well, that's the answer to your question.
Well, Congressman Tancredo, again, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, sir.
Tom Tancredo is a Republican from Colorado, and he spoke to us from Denver. When we come back after a short break, we'll be talking about some of the scientific arguments for and against reconstructing New Orleans and those levees, and be taking more of your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about political will and the reconstruction of the Gulf Coast. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. One of the difficulties in rebuilding the Gulf Coast is the specter of another Katrina, or one that's even stronger. To some, it would be irresponsible to rebuild in a place where this can, and many say will, happen again. Klaus Jacob is a research scientist at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University and joins us from NPR's Bureau in New York. And very nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. Welcome. My pleasure to be here.
Good. I wonder, at this point, what is the primary responsibility of the federal government, do you think, as it looks ahead to the reconstruction in along the Gulf Coast?
Well, government in general is there to preserve public safety. And that often means that the government should have the function to preserve individuals from their own problems that they create for themselves. And that's why we often have the government imposing certain regulations on us that we often don't like, such as flood zone maps that we are supposed to comply with. And then there is, of course, the other function, namely that if nevertheless something happens, we are responsible to help each other out, and the government is supposed to organize that effort.
Now, you've written that the decision about reconstructing in New Orleans should be based, obviously partly on political considerations and partly on fiscal considerations, but we should consider science as well.
Oh, yes. The assessment that I earlier heard from the political spectrum is quite different than what a scientist sees here happening. After all, San Francisco is not 8 or 10 feet below sea level. So we have here a situation that is quite different from even along most other portions of the Gulf Coast or Atlantic Coast that are also subject to hurricanes. Furthermore, there is a problem, and that is a geological and, if you like, a climate situation. The Mississippi River Delta sinks. Why? Because all sediments compact, and therefore they take everything with them down as they age. And New Orleans is built on this delta, so it sinks. Now, normally, the river would replenish this deficit of sediments by pouring during flooding times new sediments on it. But since 1920, we have mandated the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to build levees to protect the city, but also to keep the river in its bed, which means we send all those sediments out into the Gulf far from that area. Therefore, there is no equilibrium anymore with nature. The second natural process that we have to keep in mind is sea level is rising, and we all contribute to that by driving cars, having lights on, and all the rest of it through greenhouse gases. Currently, the rate is about 3 feet per century that these combined effects result into. 100 years from now, this will have risen to about 5 feet per century. So when you talk about rebuilding levees and dams, let's say, to Category 5, well, that would be Category 5 today. But in 50 or 100 years from now, the same levees, unless you keep them growing in height, will be capable only of Category 4 or 3 or less.
Now, I'm sure you've seen the reports of Dutch engineers. They, of course, had horrific flooding in that country in 1953, and they built an extensive system of levees and flood protections of various types. And they said, look, it can be done. It's a matter of technology, and it's a matter of money.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought up this example. Here's the difference. The Dutch have built their defenses for a 1 in 10,000 chance. In New Orleans, we have it built, that's on an annual basis. In New Orleans, they are normally roughly for 1 in 100 year chance, or 1 in 100 in any given year. But de facto, when you look how they perform for various engineering and other reasons, it's really with a chance of 1 in 30 that they would be overwhelmed, and that's what we have. So here's the difference, 30 versus 10,000.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. We'll begin with Ron. Ron's calling from High Point in North Carolina.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
My call. Primarily because of a show I heard on NPR, I went down and spent some time there. I had lived down there about 20 years ago. And I think we should rebuild. As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure why it's a option. I mean, people live in Tornado Alley. Me, myself, I grew up in California where they have earthquakes. We rebuild in Florida all the time. I'm not even sure it should be an issue. I think because it was so catastrophic and huge, and the losses were so great that some of the political will is in there simply because of the amount of money. That's an editorial for me. But there's one other thing we've forgotten about. You know, when I went down there, obviously I don't have an accent, and people, knew who the volunteers were and who wasn't. And, they asked me, why I was down there, and the uncomplicated answer was because, someone would come get us. Someone would come for us if, wherever we were, whether we were, in Colorado or Arizona, if something happened. And, I think we owe it to them because we would owe it to any other part of the country. I mean, we're talking about New Orleans right now, but I was in Biloxi. And there are people far inland, that don't have any homes. And, it's coming up on winter. And, what are we going to do about them? I think New Orleans sort of dominated it, but, all the towns I visit, past Christiane and Gulfport, it's beyond description. I mean, if they if they really showed it and how far inland it, you know, it went, people probably would be amazed. But
well, let me ask you then just about New Orleans, which has a particular problem, as Klaus Jacob has been talking to us about, in terms of the geology of the area. I mean, should we rebuild even if we know almost for a certainty it's going to happen again?
Okay, well, that's an interesting point, but I think we also have to look at, I think we've just accepted the fact that New Orleans is underwater without, you know, the reasons why, and that's, I'm glad your last guest, you know, had that on, you know, talked about that. I'm no scientist. But also, I think we have any before we repair a window in New Orleans, we have to commit to reclaiming that coastline. You know, mm-hmm. There used to be like saltwater marshes, and then there were
the wetlands that would be part of any reconstruction in terms of bringing those levees up to Category 5. That's an essential part of it. Klaus Jacob, again, I think you were talking earlier just about New Orleans and the parts of Louisiana that are protected by those levees. Do the same kind of problems apply elsewhere on the Gulf Coast?
Well, New Orleans is the anomaly, the worst case. There is, of course, hurricane and storm surge problems all along. But they are somewhat easier to deal with because the sea level rise is there more moderate because it doesn't sink like the Delta in the Mississippi area. Mm-hmm. But there is an issue that is very difficult to deal with, and I think your caller really put the finger on several issues. Let me pick up just one thing.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that there's the political and cultural and almost the moral need to do something about New Orleans. There is no doubt about it. The question is, what is our moral obligation, not just for this generation, but for future generations? Because ultimately means here in the order of 100 to 200 years, so that's only a few generations down there, probably a levee system will not do for New Orleans. So that's why I, in an op-ed piece some time ago, actually suggested in the long run, it's the wrong thing to keep New Orleans fixed to the ground. If you want to have a sustainable New Orleans, you would have to fix it to sea level. You float it. Now, that's a outrageous engineering feat, but it's probably in the long run the only, if you want to keep New Orleans where it is right now, in a map view, where you have a chance at least for sustainability.
Well, Ron, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Very well.
And we'd like to thank Klaus Jacob for his time today. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Thank you very much, sir.
Welcome.
Klaus Jacob is a research scientist at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University, and as I mentioned, he was in our bureau in New York. Joining us now with a different perspective is John Barry. He's the author of Rising Tide, The Great Mississippi Flood of 1927 and How It Changed America. He's a distinguished visiting scholar at the Center for Bioenvironmental Research at Tulane and Xavier Universities, and he's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice of you to join us today.
Thank you.
What do you think is the federal responsibility on the Gulf Coast, and does it begin with building those levees to Category 5?
Well, first, let me say that I feel a little bit like someone in Germany in 1934 who's supposed to defend the Jews' right to exist. I find it, you know, amazing that New Orleans has to justify itself. There are several points to make. First, regarding sinking, yes, I mean, that's absolutely correct. And the Mississippi River, actually, by the deposit of sediment, made all the land from Cape Girardeau, Missouri, to the Gulf. And that is now going off the continental shelf. However, there are plans, and ironically, this year, the federal government put up $500 million for the first substantial down payment to rebuild the coastline, to redirect the sediment. So that there are roughly 1,000 square miles of land between New Orleans and the Gulf that used to exist that don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be rebuilt. and that will give New Orleans enormous protection. I think it's important to note that New Orleans has become vulnerable to storms largely to benefit the rest of the United States. Now, that sediment goes off the continental shelf to keep the Mississippi River open, which benefits exports from, you know, from the entire middle part of the country. If you close down the port of New Orleans, you are going to have a significant negative impact on the rest of the country. You also have well over $100 billion in infrastructure that you're going to have to rebuild somewhere else, which, you know, again, the investment in Category 5 levies is cheap compared to rebuilding the infrastructure. I think one point that's important to make here that has been somewhat lost is that the storm that flooded Katrina was a great storm as it hit the Gulf Coast. But New Orleans, the bulk of the city, the overwhelming majority of the city, was flooded from behind, mm-hmm. not from the Gulf. It was flooded from the north, from Lake Pontchartrain. And the levees that were designed to, that storm was not a great storm on the lake. The Corps of Engineers has three standards for the storm they were designed to contain. And the Katrina fell short of each one of those three standards on the lake. The levees simply failed. Mm-hmm. And regarding the corruption issue, there's been a lot of smoke out there. The Orleans, if every allegation about corruption in the Orleans Levee Board is true, it doesn't matter. Because the federal government is 100% responsible for the design and the construction of the levees that flooded the bulk of the city. The Orleans Levee Board has nothing to do with the design or construction. That was a failure of the federal government. New Orleans is not looking for charity. It's looking for the government to stand up and take responsibility.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in on the conversation. And this is Michael. Michael joining us from Wichita in Kansas.
Yes, I wanted to comment on what the congressman from Colorado said about who should rebuild mm-hmm. the cities, and he mentioned Chicago and San Francisco. And I agree that the federal government shouldn't be subsidizing, you know, hospitals or private industry that lost their buildings and so forth. But as the what was just mentioned, the dike itself was built by the government, and they designed it, they built it. Maybe the board there in New Orleans should have been banging pots and pans to get the government to keep it maintained and to mm-hmm. keep it fortified. But it really is it shouldn't even be a question. The government built it; they're liable for it. It was supposed to withstand a Category 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Right.
That's what they got. And
well, actually, on the lake, it was only a 2, and in some cases, a 1 by some standards.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But are you saying, John Barry, that the federal government should rebuild the levees to withstand Category 3? That's what
No, I'm saying that they now you need confidence. You can't get anyone back to invest in the city with private investment unless there's confidence there's going to be protection. And that means you have to have Category 5. But let me explain that New Orleans is sort of the point of the spear of a major issue in this country. Sacramento is protected against a 100-year flood. That means there's roughly in the lifespan of the average person is well over 50% chance that Sacramento in the Central Valley of California is going to be overwhelmed. And there's roughly a 7.5% chance he'll see a 1,000-year flood in one person's lifetime in Sacramento, which is going to do to the Central Valley of California what Katrina did to New Orleans. And we need, you know, and as somebody else said earlier, the Dutch protect their people against a 10,000-year event. The Japanese protect their people against a 10,000-year event. A Category 5 protection is not even a 10,000-year event. I mean, other nations around the world have simply made a policy decision that these events are so catastrophic, not just in terms of life, but in terms of property, investment, and economic development. I mean, the Dutch after 1953 were prostrate practically after World War II, and yet they recognized that it was well worth the investment in that system. And it is clearly worth the investment on a straight, rigid cost-benefit analysis to rebuild the Category 5 protection, which would include rebuilding the coastline, which is something that can be done and will create a natural buffer.
Michael, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're going to continue this conversation when we come back from a short break. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Also, on World AIDS Day, we'll be talking with Ambassador Richard Holbrooke about his proposal for much more widespread testing for AIDS. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're discussing reconstruction of the Gulf Coast. Many residents are reluctant to return without assurance that the levee system will be rebuilt strongly enough to protect their lives and property. What does the government owe the region? Our guest is John Barry. He's the author of Rising Tide, The Great Mississippi Flood of 1927 and How It Changed America. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Alicia. Alicia calling us from Minneapolis.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. I hear all of these arguments politically, and I guess part of my situation is that I grew up there. I'm born and raised there. I haven't lived there in a couple of years, about three. But culturally speaking, New Orleans is the birthplace of the musical identity of this country. And I just don't understand how it can be so dismissed as, you know, I mean, not just considering the levees and all these fantastic reasons to rebuild. It's also the sentimentality. And I just feel like it hasn't been considered appropriately.
Well, I mean, I agree with you completely, and that's my home as well, but I'm trying to make arguments that would make sense to, a fairly cold accountant type. But the reality is, you know, nearly 25% of the natural gas in this country goes through Louisiana. Close to as much as 17% of the oil production goes through Louisiana. The idea of writing off that infrastructure, you know, because of the cost of protecting against Category 5, it just doesn't make any sense. And in to get back to the main point, you know, the erosion of that 1,000 square miles of coastline occurs not only because the sediment is going out the river, but because to benefit the rest of the country. That because pipelines and shipping channels and things like that were built into the marsh that very aggressively accelerated the erosion of those things. And New Orleans didn't benefit from that. The rest of the country benefited from that. And those things, you know, they were unintended consequence. They didn't realize the marsh would erode. Now that we know that that happened, it can be fixed. It's a problem that was already in the process of being addressed when Katrina hit. So that is a fixable problem to rebuild that coastline. And that will automatically give New Orleans significant protection.
Thanks, Alicia.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Josh in Illinois. As a Midwesterner who saw firsthand the damage that flooding caused there in 1993, I have issues rebuilding a city, New Orleans, that is below sea level. The Midwest was forced by the federal government to take measures to prevent future flood damage after the 500-year flood. The measures include relocating or abandoning entire towns. It only seems prudent to not place over 500,000 people in a city that cannot be kept dry.
Well, I mean, that makes perfect sense for the towns that were relocated, which were subjected to repeated flooding. The reality is this event is the first thing of its kind in the 300-year history of New Orleans. Now, there is an analogy to earthquakes. I mean, what is going to happen? St. Louis and Memphis sit atop the greatest earthquake fault in the United States, not San Francisco. You know, one of these days we are going to have a catastrophic earthquake in a major American city. Are we then going to walk away from that city? And, you know, and I don't think so. And I think New Orleans deserves the same respect. In addition, the point that I've been trying to make is that New Orleans can be protected. It's become vulnerable. It is, and much of that city is above sea level. People mm-hmm. keep missing that point. It's true that some of the areas that were more recently developed are below sea level. None of it is nearly as below sea level as 60% of the Netherlands, which has been protected against some very severe North Sea storms. And, you know, it is by no means impossible, or even when you look in the larger scheme of things at the, you know, when way costs, you know, not even that expensive to protect the city.
Let's get another caller in. Jim. Jim calling us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. I just spent a week with a church group down in New Orleans, and we actually were rebuilding a church in the inner city. But with my limited time there and limited experience, it just seems like to talk of abandoning that city does not make any sense. And I think people are missing the point that the hurricane really did not cause the damage until the levees failed. And they don't even necessarily have to be that much higher or that much greater. They just need to be reinforced so that they don't fail. And I think that's definitely the responsibility of the federal government.
Well, it was a responsibility, and of course, it's the greatest engineering debacle in history. Levees, if the levees had been properly built, not even reinforced, just built properly, this storm would not have flooded the bulk of the city. I think to get private investment back and to build confidence in people to get them to return, I think you probably need to make a higher level of protection.
Right. But I my sense of that whole city right now, and it's very sad, and I wish our media would do a better job of giving us a picture of what really is needed down there. But I think the federal government has to be instrumental in cleanup and restoration of services, and then I think they have to be instrumental in the protection against a further disaster like this.
Mm-hmm. At the least. You know, again, you can't compare New Orleans, a great world city, you know, the enormous infrastructure, the benefits to the rest of the country, with moving a small town in the Midwest that gets flooded every 10 years. This is the first event in the history of New Orleans like this.
Right.
Mayor Nagin of New Orleans has said he expects that the city, and of course he's a major booster of the city, but he expects that the city is going to be half the size of what it once was. Should parts of the city be abandoned?
Well, you know, I don't really think you should abandon any of the city. I think you do need to build out from the areas that are going to be most populated naturally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, at best, 50% of the city has full utilities. I have a friend uptown near Tulane University, didn't have any water whatsoever in his neighborhood, and he still doesn't have gas service. He can't move back because he can't cook. You know, you need to restore power, and your priorities probably in that area should go to the places that somebody can return to immediately. But I don't really see a reason why you should abandon any part of the city.
Well, the Lower Ninth Ward was just reopened today, I think.
Yeah, and the Lower Ninth Ward, ironically, you know, people talk about giving that up. Well, a lot in the Lower Ninth Ward's above sea level. People don't understand that. And it's, you know, a lot isn't understood. I personally can't understand why we're having the debate, why we're having the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But we are.
We are. Mm-hmm. Jim, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Let's try Dan. Dan's calling us from Phoenix.
Looking at Lake Pontchartrain in the map, I wonder, is it possible to lower the level of that lake through a series of locks, so lower it permanently, or lower it when a storm is pending?
Probably not. There was a plan and has been resurrected to put floodgates at certain passes from the Gulf into the lake to keep the ocean out of the lake. And, you know, that would be comparable to some of the things that the Dutch do. Again, the question is whether, as a nation, we choose to make it a priority to protect our citizens, and not simply in New Orleans. I was earlier using the example of Sacramento, which, you know, that is the next disaster waiting to happen, or the other places, you know, and other nations use a 10,000-year standard. In Sacramento, we use a 100-year standard. In New Orleans, we were supposed to protect the city against a 200, 250-year hurricane, but again, the levees were not properly constructed by the federal government. Again, the Orleans Levee Board had nothing to do with the design or construction of the levees. You know, since they were not properly constructed, then, you know, this event, which was not that great a storm in the lake, did flood the city.
Dan, thanks very much for the call. And John Barry, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
John Barry is the author of Rising Tide, The Great Mississippi Flood of 1927 and How It Changed America, and he was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A.